Episode 6 of Top Turtle is brought to you by Grappler's Toolbox. Basically, Gumby, if you're a grappler, you need a toolbox. What comes in that toolbox? Everything you need to be a grappler. You got tape, bomb to prevent against mat herpes. You got a copy of Jiu-Jitsu Magazine if you ever just want to read in your leisure or when you're on the toilet thinking about jiu-jitsu. And you also have Sisu mouthguards.
And this show is also brought to you by Sisu mouthguards for the most breathable, flexible, wonderful mouthguards you could possibly want.
Breathable, flexible, wonderful.
And remoldable in a lot of cases. You're going to want a Sisu mouthguard. It is going to make your grappling experience that much better.
So in summary, episode 6 is brought to you by Grappler's Toolbox. Enter promo code MANIFESTO. And it's also brought to you by Sisu Mouthguards, which is the most breathable, lightweight mouthguard on the market and available in your Grappler's Toolbox. Alright, we are rolling. This is Top Turtle MMA. I am David Tremonti, your co-host, and I'm joined by Daniel Gumby Reeland. How are you today, Dan?
Excellent.
We have a great show for you guys today. We have Lauren Murphy ahead of her UFC Fight Night 83 bout with...
We're still not 100% sure. Maybe by the time you guys are listening to this, you will know.
The card is in a state of flux. Flux. And we also talked to Smiling Sam Alvey.
Hell of a character. We got to do the interview with his jaw wired shut, so that's fun. You get to hear about relationships and cornering people who kick you in the mouth.
Go on to Stitcher, TuneIn, iTunes, wherever you get us. Leave a nice comment.
Yeah, we recently got a comment from King Kong Fists on iTunes. Be more like King Kong Fists, who gave us a 5-star rating.
King Kong Fists, he's our number one fan right now.
Apparently, and he's getting a little bit of airtime for that. So thanks, King Kong Fists.
And you could email us at topturtlemma@gmail.com, or you could catch us on Twitter at topturtlemma.
You can catch me on Twitter at Gumby Vreeland. That's V-R-E-E-L-A-N-D.
So, with all the heavy lifting out of the way, we are proud to announce that the UFC has re-signed the two free agents we most wanted them to re-sign. They re-signed Alistair Overeem, the heavyweight, and our favorite, I guess he's more than a prospect, but he's kind of a prospect, Aljamain Sterling.
I think he's still probably a prospect at this point, 4-0, but his most notable win, you would say, is Johnny Eduardo, who's not like a household name. You know, like, when was the last Johnny Eduardo fight you had seen?
Mitsugaki, too.
Oh, he beat Mitsugaki. Okay, so yeah. That's fair. I would say a bigger name, Mitsugaki. So I guess that probably elevates him on a prospect level. Eduardo might not, but Mizugaki definitely would. And he you know, arm triangled Mizugaki from the bottom.
Which was badass.
I love that shit. I try to do that shit all the time in training because I'm a guy who likes to be on bottom a little bit more often and working out a guard. So that shit is awesome, and I know how hard that is to pull off, and especially at high-level competition.
You know what I was watching, and I forgot about this? I was just on Fight Pass and saw the Gumby number one. Arm triangled from the bottom, Chuck Liddell in their first match.
Oh, yeah, Jeremy Horn. Yeah. Arm triangled Chuck Liddell. Wild submission.
But yeah, so the thing with Aljamain, and if you're a listener to the show, you know that we're both huge Aljamain fans, and I had made a case that he was the must-sign for the UFC, even though he wasn't the biggest name now. Dana White had gone on record when Benson Henderson left. Dana White said, we're not looking to sign guys going from ranked number one to ranked number 15 on the downside of their career. We're looking to sign guys who are going from 15 up to one. That's Aljamain Sterling.
That's Aljamain Sterling. And I think part of what you said before there, too, about, you know, rising to the top, that's part of what made Aljamain Sterling stay there. If you listen to his interview with Helwani, you know, he says part of what made him sign that deal is the incentives that come later. The championship,
if he got
money.
A championship, he invested in himself, essentially.
Yeah,
he,
and I think it's a smart investment, too, because I think you're going to see him fight for the title.
I can't wait.
I'm pretty sure this year. I'm going to tell you, I believe this year you'll see Aljamain Sterling fight
for the title. He basically called out
TJ
Dillashaw today, so figuring that Cruz fights Faber, maybe they go Aljamain Sterling versus TJ with the winner getting the belt?
I don't think they're going to do Cruz Faber.
Why do you say that?
I just don't think... So everybody's talking about how it's the money fight and it's the fight that everybody wants. Nobody wants that fight. We've seen it twice or three times.
No, we've seen it twice.
Twice. Yeah. Twice. It's not exciting.
But I know what you're saying. Yeah, I was going to save this for when the fight actually got announced. But
you know, Al Jermaine even today said, I know Faber deserves it. They need the trilogy. Yeah, they're 1-1, but the first win was kind of fluky. It was a quick guillotine Faber got in the WEC days.
It's a long-ass time ago,
exactly.
Too.
Exactly. And here's the thing. Does Faber need a fourth crack at the title? Yeah, I mean,
It's like bordering on Kenny Florian status.
It's
here.
Getting ridiculous, right? And so, like, I get what Al Jermaine was saying, and yes, Faber is, you know, a future Hall of Famer, don't get me wrong, but... Man, I mean, the people he's beat since that loss to Barao, you're not talking about world beaters here.
Well, and you don't play MMA math, but sometimes you play MMA math. He got easily beat by Barao, who now we wouldn't even include Barao in the same discussion as TJ Dillashaw and Cruz.
Right.
And Barao easily beat Uriah Faber. Now, you could say, again, like I said, no MMA math, but, you know, you consider the top echelon guys, you know Faber is not one of them.
He's a name.
He's always going to be a top 5, top 10 guy.
Yeah.
Always. Until he steps away.
I like him more as like the gatekeeper role than anything else.
Which is why I would love to see him fight, you know, like have him fight TJ Dillashaw. People would pay to see that. That's a more money fight.
That's like your I have a theory that they don't even hate each other and they're just building up their WWE feud.
But, well, if they're doing that, God bless them, because I'm in. Yeah. And you know, if they did something like that, you know, you could give Aljamain Sterling a title fight, and I know you don't want to give him one right now, but you could give him one right now. You could give Thomas Almeida a title fight right now, because Thomas Almeida is exciting as hell.
Sign me up for Almeida versus Aljamain Sterling right now.
I don't think they're going to do that just on like the prospect versus prospect base. You kill one of your future title challengers. If you let one of them fight Cruz right now, and by some miracle they beat Cruz, you'd set up like a trilogy between those two for the rest of time.
I think, you know, while we're talking it out loud, I do think I'd like to see Aljamain fight someone else before Cruz. I don't know if he's at the Cruz level just yet. It almost like feels like a
Sun Tzu?
Yeah, exactly. Right. A Sun Tzu who has a win over TJ Dillashaw, the former champ. But anyway, getting a little bit off tangent, we're both obviously super huge Aljamain fans, and we're happy he re-signed with the UFC. It would have been a waste to see him in Bellator or World Series of Fighting, because they just don't have the depth that 135 there anyway.
No, like I said before, I think there are good fighters at the tops of all of that division, but like he would run through one or two guys. If he is truly the best, he would run through one or two of them in each organization and it would be over. You know, like he'd beat Dantas and Joe Warren in Bellator and it'd be over.
Yeah.
You're done. Or whoever Dantas is fighting this weekend. Oh, Galvao. Yeah.
Look, we're new to the MMA scene, so I'm going to pat our back whenever I can. And I do want to say, I think we pinpointed also the Sarah Longo connection to the UFC.
Yeah.
He was never going to leave because
I don't think so either.
Matt Sarah and Dana White are boys.
And I think that's why he felt so comfortable playing it up too, because, you know, he milked it. He milked it hard. The Twitter hashtag.
He's done
came
great.
Out.
He's come out a bigger star from this free agency hunt than he was 6 months ago.
Or any of his fights. Yeah. You know, like he made himself a player in the top of the division.
Which is awesome.
With Twitter.
Good for him.
Yeah.
You know, that's great. And so then on the other side and at a much heavier weight, the UFC re-signed Alistair Overeem, which I kind of, out of the three, Benson, Henderson, Aljamain, and Overeem, I had the easiest time imagining Overeem going to Bellator just because we've seen him in other organizations, whereas Benson's a UFC guy and Aljamain we've only really seen in the UFC.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, we've seen him at Strikeforce. We've seen him, you know, elsewhere. It wouldn't be terribly surprising.
But it was a great move that they re-signed him.
Yeah, and it's smart on his part too, I think, because the money is going to be there. And you know what? He could fight three more times in the UFC. If he loses all three of them, that Bellator money isn't going to change, I don't think. I mean, they still know what he's worth to them. And he's worth no more to them off of two wins than off of two losses.
Now, so let's kind of reset the heavyweight title picture real quick. Verdum and Cain Velasquez were supposed to fight Super Bowl weekend, and both backed out, let's call it. Stipe was ready to step in, but Verdum wasn't having it. And now, you know, you and I broke down how we thought maybe Verdum versus Stipe would be in May at 198.
Stipe, I believe, tweeted and said that that's pretty much already set.
Okay, so you do not see an immediate title shot as being part of the new deal for...
No, I'm almost going to guarantee. So they got a show coming up in Rotterdam, which is pretty close to where he's originally from. So I think you could probably imagine him headlining that. And I want to say, you know, Velasquez probably not ready for that fight in time. but maybe Andre Arlovsky.
Right.
Arlovsky versus Overeem, because, you know, Rothwell and JDS are booked, plus he just beat JDS.
Yeah.
You know,
Mir and Hunt are booked.
Yep. So I'd say probably, I mean, it could be Hunt off of a win if he comes out unscathed. I think that fight comes probably like a couple months before Rotterdam. I have to check the official date on Rotterdam again. But I'd imagine he's headlining that against somebody like Arlovsky
and
or Hunt.
I would imagine if he wins that fight in you know, close to his hometown or where he started fighting, I would imagine he does get a title shot by the end of the year. Do we think that's safe to say?
I think it's safe to say, but I'm not happy thinking that he's definitely going to win because he's been so bipolar in his fights.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
he had like a 3-fight losing streak in 2014.
He's a guy who got knocked out by Travis Brown and then knocked out Dos Santos. You know, like, figure that one out, because I can't.
Right.
You know, or maybe he gets a rematch against Travis Brown.
Right.
You know, there's Roy Nelson fight again in there, too. So, you know, I mean, there's a lot of fun fights for him in a division that doesn't have a lot of fun fights at the top left, you know, like, because most of those guys have fought each other.
Right. So, and I think we could kind of wrap up on this, which is when you and I think it was around episode 2, if anyone wants to go back and listen, hit the old download button. We made our cases for who the must resign was out of the big three free agents, Sterling, Benson Henderson, and Overeem. And here we are. Benson's gone. Overeem and Sterling have stayed. I think the UFC came out ahead on this one, to be quite honest with you. They kept the two they needed to keep.
I think they made the right move. And, you know, again, if you flip back through those last episodes or if you're an avid listener, I think I threw out in one of those episodes the conspiracy theory that maybe they're letting Benson Henderson walk as, like, to shut up the antitrust people. Or maybe I just said that off the air. I can't remember.
No, you said it on the air, and I think it's valid. I mean, I think the antitrust actually speaks to, like, the years 2009 through 2011, whenever Strikeforce was around. But it still sets a precedent that they're not, you know, they let people come and go. They don't just take whoever they want.
Yeah, and I'm not a law guy, but I would imagine that whatever the lawsuit pertains to, this still doesn't look good.
Yes,
for them,
right.
No,
it's still, it still helped their trying to project an image like, hey, we're powerless sometimes.
Yeah, we can't hold on to Ben Henderson. And we know they can.
Right. And we also know, I mean, I think he's gone on record as saying, Benson Henderson, in the past, that he wanted to retire at age 33. He's like 32 right now. And maybe that's still not the case, but they might have just said to themselves, you know what, this guy maybe has a couple more years left.
He might go steal Bellator's title. You know what I think too? If he goes and wins Bellator's title, he makes the UFC look great.
Right.
Because here's this guy who bottomed out in our 155 division. He was the champ, lost pretty brutally.
Yeah. First round armbar submission.
And then
Anthony
lost
Pettis
his next fight by knockout to the future champ.
RDA.
That makes it look like he can't hang with their division. If he goes over to Bellator and wins the title,
rolls
one division
out of bed
up
and just wins the title, right. Yep.
Easy.
Yeah.
Makes easy. The UFC looks great. Bellator looks like a second-rate promotion.
There you have it. That's the state of free agency. And not that, you know, he's as big a name. He's 37 years old, but Matt Mitrione is still a free agent.
Oh, that's true, too. I love Meathead.
All right. So with that being said, there's your update in free agency. And now we will cut to Gumby catching up with Lauren Murphy.
Like I said, she's a fun interview, has a heck of a job promoting herself. And she trains with friend of the show, MMA Labs, John Crouch. So listen in and enjoy that.
All right. This interview is brought to you by New England Submission Fighting. New England Submission Fighting, a mixed martial arts gym in the lovely college town of Amherst, Massachusetts. New England Submission Fighting is where Gumby trains. It's where I train. So, hey, maybe we're a little biased, but you know what? I don't think we are. I've been to gyms in New York City. I started training out in Los Angeles. And NESF is just as good. Don't think of it as a country gym. Think of it as a great gym that just happens to be in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, and if you go to any of the colleges in the area, and there are, you know, four or five of them right in this area, if you're looking to train martial arts while you're here in college, definitely stop by. It's a great environment for you to start your jiu-jitsu career.
Class is 6 days a week. Stand-up striking on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Submission grappling, no gi, is the specialty. Mondays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. But you also have a gi class on Friday taught by Black Belt Dave Roy. So, without further ado, here is Gumby catching up with Lauren Murphy, as provided and brought to you by New England Submission Fighting.
This is Daniel Gumby Vreeland here with Lauren Murphy. Lauren fights this weekend at Ultimate Fight Night 83 in Pittsburgh, although at the current moment, we're not quite sure of the opponent. So she was supposed to fight Sarah Moraes this weekend, but she dropped out. Her manager has assured me she has a replacement lined up. Lauren, how has that affected your training so far?
Nothing really at all. We're just going to stick with the same game plan and go out there and kick somebody's ass. So...
And that somebody, so you're, like I said, your manager has informed me that they are going to get you a replacement. Have they let you in on who that will be at this point, or do you have any ideas?
Yes, I do know who it's going to be. I'm excited about it. I'm really happy for her, and I think it's going to be a great fight.
All right. So, and obviously the dancing around there is because we're not allowed to know anything until everybody knows something.
Oh, yeah. You know how it is. Like, I can't announce it or say anything, but I'm pretty sure, I got my bout agreement today and stuff, so I'm sure they're going to announce it soon.
All right, so that's good news. So let's get into a little bit of your road in the UFC so far. So a little bumpy start to your UFC career. You're 0-2, but both of those losses are to former title challengers, and now you're getting a fight with only a week's notice. Do you feel like your UFC career has been kind of... almost an unfair setup being title challengers right out of the gate?
No, I think I won those fights. Like when you said, but I thought you were going to follow it up with everybody thinks you actually won those fights. Like, well, that's what it should be. I don't think those losses are really losses, you know?
I would definitely agree, at least with the split decision. The split decision, very clear to me, at least I saw it as 2-1. The other one, you know, it's tough to overturn with three judges to none. But what can you do to change that this upcoming time to make it so that the judges agree with you this time?
Yeah, just go out there and kick her ass. Like, hopefully we're not going to have any judges involved. I mean, like, it honestly really annoys me when people are like, oh, just don't get the judges involved. I'm like, you know, you're talking about people in the UFC, right? Like, if it was, you know, if it was just that easy to go out there and finish everybody every time, then honestly, the fights would be pretty boring, I think. So, like, it's so simple to say, like, oh, just finish all your opponents and it'll be no problem. It's much, much harder in practice when you are literally fighting the best people in the world. So, the best I can do is go out there and fight my hardest and do my best and make changes where I think I need to, and I've done that. Like, I made some changes this camp, just trying to stay more positive, a little more relaxed, worrying less, and I think I had a much better camp because of that.
So you mentioned making some of those changes at camp. Are those changes that you wanted to institute into your game plan, or is that something your coach is instituting?
Well, both of us I had talked to my coach about it for quite a while. When I first came to the lab, it was a really big step up in training. It was a lot different working with world-class athletes every single day, and I was really comfortable at my old gym. I really liked all my old training partners. I felt really good there, and I think I was making a lot of progress there. But to go to the lab and work with people, you know, to work with Jocelyn Liebarger every day that we do boxing, or to have Luke Sanders in there, Benson Henderson, Scott Holtzman, you know what I mean, to have all those killers in there. And then there's all these amateur guys and newer pros that people have never heard of, and they are rock stars. Like, there's literally a guy making his pro debut here in a couple weeks. He goes to our gym and he's a brown belt, and like, he whoops on everybody, and he's a really good fighter. He's going to be a UFC champion someday, but it's like, you wouldn't know his name if I said it. But I get to go in and work with these guys, you know, every single day. And so it kind of messed with me a little bit, and I would talk to my coach about it, and he would say, man, you just need to be more positive. You just need to be, you know, more kind to yourself. Don't be so hard on yourself. And I went and started seeing a sports psych, and I got some help with that, and I think it made a big difference.
So now you're seeing a sports psychologist on the side. Were there other changes made to your camp to make the experience more positive one?
I don't think so, no. I mean, just some actions that I would take to be more positive and stuff like that, but I didn't change up any, like, I didn't change up any of my sparring partners. I didn't start going at a different time or anything like that. I mean, I do all the same stuff for my camp.
So you kind of started late in training, correct? In your
yeah.
life, yeah. So
yeah.
Do you feel like that late start in your career has made it so that you are harder on yourself? Because you've mentioned that you're hard on yourself, trying to get as far as you can really fast, and that you're really strict on yourself. Do you think that like late start in trying to make up for a little bit of lost time has anything to do with it?
No, I think that I've always kind of been like a perfectionist in everything that I've ever done in my life. Even before I ever started fighting, I always took it to, you know, 110%. When I was in college, I went to school and I got straight A's and scholarships and everything else. And I would work really hard to get really good grades and be the best in my class. It's a big part of my story. I used to drink a lot, do a lot of drugs. And even that, like, I wanted to be the best at, you know what I mean? So I took that to, like, the farthest reaches I could without dying. And so to me, it's like anything I take up in my life and feel passionate about, I'm going to run it until the wheels fall off. Mm-hmm.
And as an MMA fighter and being somebody who did hold a championship and being a perfectionist, was it hard for you to walk away from an organization where you were the champion to one where you're, you know, relatively unknown at the time of making your debut?
No, I mean, like, I would have defended my belt in Invicta, and I would have done it proudly. I was really proud to be the Invicta champ, but Invicta kind of went through a rough time, like, right after I won the belt, and we weren't sure when they were going to have any more shows. The woman they wanted me to rematch, Miriam Nakamoto, had been injured with a serious knee injury. We didn't know if she was, like, ever going to fight again or what the deal was, and I was watching all these other women go to the UFC, and they were getting fights and they were making money. And that's, I mean, I think that's every fighter's dream. Every champion Invicta has said that they want to go to the UFC, every single one in all the weight classes. Michelle Waterson did go to the UFC. Cyborg made no secret that she wanted to fight in the UFC. You know what I mean? So I don't think that it was so much like a perfectionist thing that I didn't want to stick around, but it was definitely just trying to take my career to that next level.
That makes a lot of sense. So you said part of it was trying to get more fights. Now, it's been 11 months since the last time you fought. Is that by choice, or is that because the UFC has taken some criticism on how often they book women fights? So is it by choice that it's been 11 months? Have you been preparing for it more, or is that like something that you just couldn't get a fight?
I think we were offered a fight a little bit sooner. I'm trying to remember. I think we were offered a fight a little bit sooner, and I turned it down because I was going through a custody battle with my kid. So that was taking up a lot of, like, time and energy and stuff like that. Oh, yeah, I was. I was offered a fight on the Houston card back in, like, last October, and my son had just moved in with us. And so I was like, no, I just want to, you know, really make sure he has a good transition and be with him, you know, during this time. And not take any fights right now. So that was partially by choice. It is a long wait between fights for us, but, you know, I don't know. That's partially to blame because the women's division is really thin right now.
Yeah. And so you mentioned that women's division being a little bit thin. Do you feel like after your two performances being so solid that you're actually a much shorter distance to the top than the rankings or your record would suggest?
I don't think so. Part of that is because the last two fights I had were so boring. And I think, like, I mean, I fought the two most boring women in the division. They're literally the only two boring fights I've ever had in my career. But, you know, I would need a couple more fights before I was ready to even start talking about contendership or anything like that. Like, I want to have a solid career. I don't mind fighting, you know, girls ranked in the top 10 for the rest of my career. Like, it wouldn't be a problem for me, you know?
And so you mentioned those two being two of the most boring fighters in the women's division. Can we safely assume that the person that you're happy for to take this upcoming fight is a little bit more exciting?
Yeah, well, anybody's more exciting than those two, honestly. So, but yes, I think I watched some tape on her. I think she comes to fight. She comes out swinging and good, like finally, you know what I mean? That's exactly what I'm looking forward to, and it'll be a good test for me too.
And something to show it all off. So we're going to end up here in just a second. Can I get a prediction for this weekend from you, or are you totally not that type?
No, I know there's going to be a finish. So I'm definitely coming to finish this chick. I'm going to welcome her to the UFC and show her the level of competition that she signed up for.
All right. Sounds awesome. And before we let you go, can we give you a second to, you know, give a shout out to any sponsors, training partners, coaches, things like that before we go?
Yeah, big thanks to AJ Hiller with MMA Signatures. If you're in like the Pittsburgh area or over on the East Coast. He just opened up a restaurant, so make sure you check that out and then go check out his website. It's MMASignaturesUSA.com, and he just has a bunch of cool MMA memorabilia signed by any famous fighter you can think of. He's a really good dude, and he's helped me out a lot. So you guys make sure to show some love towards him and some support. He's helped a lot of fighters. And then big thanks to my team and my manager and, the UFC for getting me a fight so quick.
All right. Thank you very much, Lauren. We appreciate your time.
Thanks a lot, man.
All right, so there you have it. Lauren Murphy really giving us the VH1 Behind the Music E-True Hollywood story of her life.
Yeah, she's a very, very candid interview. She's a lot of fun to interview, too. Very animated. You got to love that she said she fought two of the most boring fighters in her division. Obviously, I won't comment on that. Because
I will. McMahon's kind of boring.
Yeah, I would say Liz Carmouche definitely more exciting than McMahon, and she's adamant that she won those two fights, which I can almost agree with her on the McMahon one. The Carmouche, she got three judges who all say Liz Carmouche wins. You know, a little bit harder. Split decisions, I can argue a little bit. Unanimous, it's a little bit harder.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so moving on, we are going to break down UFC Fight Night 83. It is this Sunday night.
It is Sunday in Pittsburgh.
And, you know, this was supposed to be main event, Cowboy Cerrone versus Tim Dirty Bird Means, but Tim Means lived up to his nickname, Dirty Bird, and he popped for being a Dirty Bird. He did some steroids.
Yeah, well, so just to give the clean background on that, too, no pun intended, He tested positive for something that's typically used to mask steroids. So whether or not it was actually anabolic steroids in his system or not, up for debate. But he's definitely, you know, using some shit that's banned by USADA.
So then, in maybe the laziest bit of matchmaking I've ever seen the UFC do, they went down the roster and they're like, who can we have Donald Cowboy Cerrone fight? Oh, I know. Let's have him fight the other guy with the nickname Cowboy so we could bill it as Cowboy versus Cowboy Brokeback Mountain Part 2.
Yeah, so I don't know if that's the way they made that decision. I tend to believe that, you know, Oliveira, very fun fighter to watch. You know, he's exciting on his feet. I think more or less they saw a guy who would make an interesting fight with Cerrone. He wouldn't try to, like, you know, out-muscle him and grapple him for 4 hours. And I think they did a good job finding that guy. I also think they found a guy kind of like Means, who seems to be a step below Cerrone and who Cerrone could probably take care of fairly easily. Because I think that's what's going to happen here. While Oliveira can definitely hang with him on his feet, I'm not quite sure he can hang with him on the ground. And it's been a while since we've seen Cerrone go to the ground. But I wouldn't be surprised to see his grappling skills in action here.
So basically, just to set it up again, Alex Brazilian Cowboy Oliveira is coming off 3 wins in a row. He beat KJ Nunes by submission. He knocked out Petr Halman. And then, of course, American Cowboy is coming off that brutal loss to Dos Anjos. But the way you see this going down is American Cowboy via TKO?
I'm thinking submission. I think he could probably pull off the submission here. It's been a while since we've seen him on the ground. Oliveira might be the type of guy who is willing to engage him on the ground, and I think that's a mistake. He's just like a very forward, very confident in himself style, which is good for a lot of people, but I'm a little bit worried that he kind of overextends how confident he is and winds up getting caught here by Cerrone. I'm just going to say Cerrone finishes it.
All right, and Cerrone is the -260 favorite in most sports books. Alex Oliveira is a +226 dog.
And that's about right for me.
All right, so moving on, the co-main event, I guess you would call it, would be Derek Brunson. This is in the middleweight division. He is coming off 3 wins in a row. He will be fighting Rowan Carnero, who is coming off a big win over Mark Munoz. He retired Munoz, if I'm not mistaken.
That's
is that correct?
Left his gloves in the ring.
And then, actually, you know what? I don't know that to be true, because the Munoz fight happened at Rousey's in Gano, UFC 184. So Carnero hasn't fought in over a year. Did Munoz retire in the Philippines?
Oh, he did retire in the Philippines. That was a different fight.
Yeah, who was that?
All right, we'll think of it.
Yeah, we'll look that up. The intern's on it. But anyway, regardless, Carnero hasn't fought in exactly a year. He beat Munoz last. What are you thinking for this fight, Gumby?
I think this is a pretty easy fight for Brunson, actually. While Carnero's got like a really good grappling game, as we saw with Munoz, not an easy guy to tap out, not an easy guy to dominate from the ground. You know, Brunson is on a roll, man. Three in a row in that very tough division.
And he lost to suspected PED user Yoel Romero via TKO in the third round.
And that's his last loss.
That's his last loss.
So, I mean, really, his win streak could extend longer than that if you want to disqualify that, which, you know, you get into a slippery slope arguing that. But, you know, he's a really strong, really muscly guy, and I don't think Carnero's going to get him down. And if he doesn't get him down, he's in trouble on the feet, because I don't think that's a fight that Carnero wins on the feet.
Yeah, I think Brunson is going to make a play here for, I think he's ranked number 12. I think he's going to make a play to get ranked in the top 10 soon if he, you know, four-fight win streak.
Yeah.
Beating Carnero, does that necessarily get him in the top 10? Eh.
He's going to need to beat him convincingly. Like, we need to see a finish. And you know, I don't see a finish coming here. You know, this seems like kind of the drag him out, you know, try to out-muscle each other kind of fight. And you know, those tend to wind up being the ones that go to decision.
Right. So in Vegas, you have Carnero is a plus 280 dog. Brunson is the minus 327 favorite. No reason to pick against Brunson.
I'm not on a Vegas sportsbook. Not at all. No.
All right. Now, of course, there was, we should mention, the John Lineker versus Cody Garbrandt fight. We were excited about that at 135 pounds. Lineker got dengue fever and had to pull out of the fight. Now, there's a lot of late, last-minute pullouts in UFC, sometimes questionable. Sometimes you think, really, you had to pull out for that? Dengue fever?
That's pretty real.
Yeah, passable. All right. I accept.
That being said, if they find a replacement, I mean, bet on Garbrandt. Garbrandt, you know, nobody's going to beat him on 5 days' notice, especially the level of talent you would imagine who would take that fight on 5 days' notice. It's a shame that fight's not happening, though, because that was the most intriguing fight on the card.
I was excited about that fight, too.
And to me, the second most intriguing fight on the card was Brandon Thatch versus C.R. Bazzara.
Bazzara?
I'm pretty sure it's C.R. Who couldn't get the medicals done in Pennsylvania.
And they didn't name a replacement for him.
No, what they did was they just moved the fight to 96.
That's right.
So okay. So now they'll both be fighting on 196. That fight's still going to happen, but unfortunately, you know, this card taking those two hits right in a row, you know, as two of the most exciting fights for me, it's pretty
tough.
Upsetting.
It's probably a good thing that there was no UFC last weekend, so at least built up an appetite. This is one of those things where if it was like three weekends in a row, you know, this card really doesn't
look... Or three fights in 3 days.
Right, exactly. Yeah. All right, so moving to the featherweight division, you have Dennis Bermudez. He is coming off two losses in a row, but to top-flight competition, Ricardo Lamas by submission, and he lost to Jeremy Stephens via TKO. He will be fighting Tatsuya Kawajiri, who is on a two-fight winning streak himself. He beat Dennis Seaver via unanimous decision, and he beat Jason Knight via unanimous decision. How do you see this one playing out, Gunn?
So first of all, that Knight we should talk about for a second, because Jason Knight took that fight on like 3 days' notice. And I think he put up a hell of a fight off of his back. Kawajiri is the kind of guy who comes out, bull rushes you, takes you down, lays on top of you, lands some ground and pound. But all through that process, Jason Knight was pulling some rubber guard stuff. And it was a lot of fun to watch, which is not typical of a Kawajiri fight. And, you know, Bermudez is more of a wrestler, too. I think because Bermudez is way better on his feet than Kawajiri is, this plays really well into his hands. Because you got two guys, both with phenomenal wrestling, unless one of their wrestling overtakes the other one, which I don't think there's a big enough gap to do, this takes place on the feet or against the cage, and Bermudez is a far better fighter there. I will say that if you're planning on laying some money, I would assume that Kawajiri is a pretty significant underdog.
He is a plus 244 dog.
Yeah, maybe worth a play at 244, because while I am going to say I like Bermudez on the feet, if this does take place on the feet, there is always that possibility that Kawajiri's wrestling has become that good, and he might lay this one out for three rounds. And if he does that, you know, this could be a pretty easy win for him, and a nice way to, like, up your parlay.
Sure. I mean, I'm picking Dennis Bermudez to come back here. I'm a big fan of Dennis Bermudez. I don't think he's, like, upper echelon tops of the division, but I think he's pretty freaking good.
Yeah, he was getting there with that win streak. Didn't he have, like, a 5 or 6 fight win streak before those two losses?
That's correct. It was something around there. And then, you know, the Jeremy Stephens fight was almost like a mini war over. He got knocked out in the third round via flying knee. That was at the McGregor Mendez fight. It was the second flying knee of that night.
Gotta love a double flying knee.
So we will have to look to see how his chin bounces back off of that. But I think we're both safe to say Dennis Bermudez all the way.
I think so.
All right, then in the middleweight division, you have Joe Diesel Riggs, the veteran stalwart of the division. He's coming off a win over Ron Stallings. Actually, that was a disqualification in September.
Yeah, it was an upkick, right? Yeah. Weird upkick from the knees.
So it is what it is. If you go back a little further, he lost to Patrick Cote and Ben Saunders before that. He'll be fighting Chris Camozzi. Camozzi's coming off a win over Tom Watson via unanimous decision. That was back in August, and before that, he lost to Jacques Array. How do you see this one going down?
Well, first of all, we should talk about that if we're going to discount that win for Joe Riggs, we should also discount one of those losses, too. The one to Ben Saunders, he tried to pull guard on Ben Saunders. Ben Saunders tried to pull guard on him. They fell to the floor, and Joe Riggs' shoulder came out of his joint.
That was the omoplata?
It was. I mean, okay, so it was an omoplata because he was pulling for his rubber guard stuff, but he did not sink in an omoplata. He pulled the foot over the shoulder, and Riggs' shoulder was already out, and he was already tapping before Saunders turned the corner. So if we're going to disqualify his win, which I think he was largely winning during that fight, we disqualify the loss, too. There's not a real whole lot to read off of Riggs in the past couple years. I mean, like you said, two of those last three fights we don't count. I mean, what was the show that Bellator put together, the Ultimate Fighter for Bellator? What the fuck was that called?
I can't remember.
Fight Warrior or something. Some damn thing that Joe Riggs won. So that's like the best read we have on him in the last few years. He's a tough guy to nail down, but he's gritty as hell. In kind of the same style as Camozzi. He'll fight you anywhere. He'll grind you out. You know, their heart is for days. You know, I see this being a war. This is probably a great fight to watch, despite the fact that on paper it's not really appealing. I'm going to go with Joe Diesel Riggs on this one.
Boom. Picking the veteran.
And only because, you know, first of all, love the tattoo, the Diesel across the stomach. Got to get extra points for that.
Such an ugly tattoo, but keep going.
Still not as bad as Alan Belcher's. Alan Belcher's Johnny Cash / Muhammad Ali tattoo.
And to me, nothing's as bad as Brock Lesnar's the sword that looks like a penis.
Yeah,
on
the
his
dick chest.
Chest.
Yeah. Three, phenomenal.
Would never say that to Brock Lesnar's face, by the way. I would tell him it's awesome.
Dear Brock, if you're listening to this, I'm getting that tattoo next week, so don't worry about it. So Joe Riggs, I mean, just like Miles of Hart, the guy needs a win here to stay relevant, to stay in this division. And, you know, I'm going to say his heart gets him this win.
All right, I like it. And in Vegas, Joe Riggs is – ooh, why do I not have that? Well, that's very depressing. I don't know, Gumby. Pretend you were Vegas. What would you say?
I'm probably saying in this one that Riggs is probably a dog, but probably not more than like a 130, 140 dog, which if you're betting puts Camozzi at like a negative 160, 165 favorite. And I would say right around that range.
Got you. And then the last fight on the main card, you have James Crouch versus Shane Campbell at lightweight. Crouch is coming off a win over your boy Darren Cruikshank, a submission in July of 2015. And Shane Campbell is coming off a win over Elias Silveiro, a unanimous decision win in August of 2015. How do you see this one playing out?
So Campbell is a very fun Muay Thai fighter to watch. If you have not seen him fight before, definitely check out some of his fights. His fight with Silveiro, leg kicks for days, fun combinations, hitting the stomach when he pulls him in, knees to the chest, knees to the head. Lots of fun stuff out of Campbell. Kraus is got the stand-up, probably not the stand-up Campbell does. And he got that win against Cruikshank largely because Cruikshank's defensive jiu-jitsu is not very good. So he took his back, choked him out pretty easily. Campbell is pretty good at defending the takedown. He labors a little bit for him, but if he can keep his feet here, he is better than Kraus on the feet. And I think that this is a good play. I'm going to, again, go out on a limb here and say he's most likely an underdog. And I think he's a live dog here because I think that the difference between the stand-up here is what makes the pick for me, Shane Campbell.
All right. Well, with that said, that wraps up the main card for us. Right now, what I'd like to do is cut to Gumby catching up with smiling Sam Alvey.
Smiling almost by force because he's got his jaw wired shut into a big smiling formation. Really, just kind of like an awkward, fun interview, as things always
are
with
Sam.
He's such a
trooper. I mean, we said we could reschedule, and he said, no, I'm good.
Yeah, it wasn't even actually a reschedule. I asked him if he would schedule one, and he was like, yeah, my jaw's wired shut, but I'm all good with it. Other fun bit, you won't hear this on the recording, but he's got a ringback tone on there that sings Life's a Happy Song from the Muppets, and it's just phenomenal.
He's
had me in stitches before we even started talking.
All right, so with that said, here is Gumby catching up with smiling Sam Alvey.
This is Daniel Gumby Vreeland here with Top Turtle MMA Podcast. I'm here with Sam Alvey, who was supposed to be fighting on Ultimate Fight Night 82. That was Tim Means versus Donald Cerrone. And that was on February 21st against Daniel Serafian. However, he is now out of commission, injured. Sam, could you tell us a little bit about what that injury is?
Yeah, I could tell you about it, and you can probably hear it. I broke my jaw, so my jaw is currently wired shut. I just had a little accident in practice, and I'm drinking to a straw now.
Ooh, sounds like lots of fun. Now, how exactly did your jaw break in practice? Was it just a nice shot from a training partner, an accident?
Yeah, well, it was both. I mean, he didn't mean to, and honestly, it was a bad kick. It just landed well. But no fears. His foot is okay. I didn't injure his foot at all. It just happened.
Do you want to give a shout out to the training partner who did that to you?
Yeah, actually, my boy who was fighting on the same card, Sean Strickland. Yeah, he the jiu-jitsu wizard broke my jaw.
Wow, heck of a plug there for his upcoming fight. With that jaw wired shut, are you completely out of commission? Like no contact? Or are you still able to like work your hands a little bit?
I can hit mitts and bags, but that's about it. I can't do any jiu-jitsu, no wrestling, no anything. I can hit mitts.
Hit mitts, that's it. Oh, so that's got to be getting a little bit tiring, although that seems to be what you do best. Now, you still smiling through that wired shut jaw?
Oh, you know what? I can't help but smile now. My face has been surgically implanted with metal braces that keep me smiling.
Even better for you, huh? You literally cannot stop smiling now.
Yeah. It's uncomfortable, but you know what? My name lives up to it.
Yeah. So the replacement fight's going to be on the same card with your boy. That's going to be something you're watching to see your what would have been your opponent?
Actually, I believe I'm going to be there. I think, Sean, I believe I'm going to be cornering him for that fight. I'll still be out there, and my jaw will be unhinged, so you'll get to see me being in action in the corner.
Oh, awesome. So you'll actually get to, you know, maybe a little bit less muffled in that corner.
Yeah.
So speaking of corners, I actually had an interesting question here for you. So your wife, for those of you who don't know, his wife is a winner of America's Next Top Model. Is often in his corner and is his lead corner for most of his fights. How did that idea to have your wife in your corner come about?
She was a free ticket if I said she was in my corner. And that's really what it was. And she ended up taking it more serious than I ever did, and she started learning about this. And slowly but surely, she helped me get the record and success I've had.
So she does give lots of, like, fight information in the corner, too? She's, like, a fight watcher now?
Absolutely. She does more of the research on the guys I'm fighting than I do. She comes, she helps game plan, she helps, you know, drive me, focus me, and she is the best hander up in the business.
Wow, that's kind of surprising. It's not exactly, when you look at her, it's not exactly the first thing you would think is fight corner. And that actually leads me to my next question. How did an American's Next Top Model and an MMA fighter meet and hit it off and lead to this unlikely cornering?
Years before I started fighting, before she was ever on the show, we worked at a Renaissance fair together. So I worked selling steak on a stick. She sold bodice.
Wait.
And we ended up hooking up, and that was that.
Wow, so a Renaissance fair was how you guys wound up together?
Yep.
Wow. You know? Very, very unlikely situation there. And you weren't fighting at the Renaissance Fair at all? No sword combat?
No fighting, no nothing. I didn't start training until somebody said they'd pay me. I mean, I had no idea what the UFC was. It was just someone said I could fight in a cage, and I said, hey, that sounds like fun.
Well,
not too long after, I fought in Russia. I fought in a tournament. I fought this, I fought that, and I just started winning. Eventually, somebody said they'd pay me, and I thought, I was like, wow, you're quite the sucker. I would have done it for free. But, yeah.
So back to fighting, and you said, you got your starts in kind of a humble way there, just, enjoying punching people in the head. So you will be in attendance to watch the replacement fight. You're never really one to shy away from calling people out. Is it your intention to get another crack at Daniel Serafian when if he is victorious?
There's a pair of Daniels I want to fight. Daniel Serafian, it was going to be a good fight. It was going to win me an extra $50,000. It just was. I mean, it's such a good fight for the two of us. So he is on my list. And then Daniel Kelly, or not Daniel Kelly, I've already fought Daniel Kelly. The European boy, man, I'm blanking on his name.
Dan Hardy?
No, not that one. Oh, Derek, got it. Yeah, I get hit in the head for a living and I start forgetting stuff.
That's quite all right. I'm trying to...
Yeah, it'll come to me.
All right, I'm trying
to... For Athen, I'd love the opportunity to fight him again.
Yeah, so, and you said that you think that that's a fight that automatically wins you 50 Gs. What part of his way of fighting or approaching the fight makes you think that that's definitely money in the bank?
Well, the guy is an animal, and he hits hard. I mean, he's got that physique where he throws a punch and it rattles the audience. And then on top of that, he's got a jiu-jitsu game that he's a black belt, and he's a legitimate Brazilian. So it's just a fight that could go anywhere, probably would go everywhere, and we would get fight of the night. Or, better yet, I would get knockout of the night, but, fight of the night's guaranteed, knockout of the night would be pretty sweet.
That's right, and you could always go 2-for-1 there, too.
Yeah, absolutely, I could.
Yeah. So, we're actually a little bit short on time. Before we go, is there anything that you would like to plug as far as sponsors, people who are helping you out when you have your jaw wired shut or anything like that?
I tell you what, my strength and conditioning coaches, Dynamic Fitness, they're about as good as they get. I love, there's a lot of talk about Reebok. I'm a big fan. I like the product. I like what they're doing for the sport. And, you just hit me up on Twitter at @SmileAndSam. I try and respond to everyone, and just thank you all for watching. Without you guys, I wouldn't have a job.
Yeah, and you certainly make it fun to watch, and it's it is refreshing to hear some things about Reebok like that. So thank you very much for joining us, Sam. We really appreciated having you and hearing the stories. Heal up.
Hey, thank you very much, sir.
All right, so there you have it, Smiling Sam Alvey with a wired shut jaw. What a guy.
You got to love the fact that he's willing to do an interview with us, sharing some fun stories about training, about,
Renaissance fairs.
Renaissance fairs and selling meat on a stick, all kinds of fun stuff. So, gave us the opportunity to have him on, even though there's not a fight coming up. You can't pass up a chance to talk to Sam Alvey.
He's a great guy. So, somewhat apropos that we're segueing out of the Sam Alvey interview, because the first fight we'll talk about on the prelims of Fight Night 83 is Alex Garcia, the Dominican Nightmare, training out of Montreal, Quebec, Canada, going against Sean Strickland. Strickland, the man who actually broke Sam Alvey's jaw.
And as Sam Alvey told us in the interview, also will be cornering Sean Strickland. He'll have the wires out by then, but... getting to corner the guy who just broke his jaw, you got to love training partners.
Love training partners. So Strickland is coming off a win of Igor Araujo. It was a unanimous decision win. And the Dominican Nightmare, Garcia, is coming off a win of veteran Mike Swick, also a unanimous decision back in July. How do you see this one playing out, Gumby?
So I like Garcia. I think he's an exciting guy. He's got lots of power in his fists and things like that. And he's fast, Swick, you could joke his nickname's Quick Swick, but he kind of got outspeeded by Alex Garcia, and now you got Sean Strickland to fight, and he's probably still faster, but I think this is the worst possible matchup for Alex Garcia. Strickland, just a gritty wrestler, bigger frame, just a tough guy. He's a tough guy to put away, and he's a tough guy to battle for three rounds because he fights so heavy. And I'm just going to say that I think that he's going to grind one out here against Garcia.
So the odds have it very close. Most sports books, Garcia is the plus 105 dog, Strickland the minus 125 favorite. For me, when it's that close, I always bet for the TriStar guy. So, you know, I'll differ you on this just for shits and gigs, and I'll go Alex Garcia.
All right. I'm a little
bit. You're nonplussed by that.
I'm not impressed by that. Mostly because I would have guessed that Strickland was going to be the dog, but a little bit surprising to me that he's the favorite. It looks like I'm a little bit more on top of the books than I thought I was.
I mean, he's as much as a minus 130 favorite in some books, yeah. And then as low, and then lowest is 117 actually, Pinnacle.
Oh, okay, so that's pretty close to even. That's almost a pick 'em.
All right, moving on. You have Daniel Serafian. He is Brazilian. This is in the middleweight division. Taking on, I'm going to butcher this name, Oluwale Bangbos. Bangbos. And he was the short notice fight he took against Uriah Hall in August. I think he comes out of Ring of Combat, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you're right on that one. He
lost to Uriah Hall.
So I'm going to be honest here. You know, I think he's one of those guys. If you remember correctly, Uriah Hall had probably three or four replacements there on that fight card.
Right.
And, you know, he was the Bangbos,
Bangbos.
Yeah, I don't mean to be mean to anybody's name, because Vreeland's not a really easy name to say either. You know, it is what it is. He got that fight after they offered it to three other people. And to be honest, I think they were probably a little bit desperate.
It was Ring of Combat. He was on a 5-fight win streak in Ring of Combat.
But he has five fights.
Yeah, and
other than that one,
knockouts in the first round, all friggin' five of them.
Yeah, but I think he probably got the jump to the UFC a little bit too early, just because they were desperate for a guy. I think he's a guy that probably needs to sharpen up a large portion of his game before he goes much further. And Serafian is not. I mean, he's not a top of the division guy like Uriah Hall is, but he's definitely good enough everywhere to beat Bangbos.
He's 2-3 in the UFC. He has a loss to CB Dalloway, Cesar Ferreira, and Kichi Kinemoto, but he has a win, and he's coming off this win over Antonio Dos Santos, KO in the second round, and he also has a win over Eddie Mendez, submission in the first round.
Yeah, and that's pretty much what you know of him, too, is that he brings the fight no matter what. He's not phenomenal, but he's definitely good enough to beat Bangbos. I would say this is an easy pick for me, and I don't think that you'll never see Bangbos again, but he definitely needs to sharpen up a lot of things from what I saw in the Hall fight.
And Serafian is a minus 200 favorite in most sports books.
I think that's low, to be honest with you.
Bangbos is plus 170.
Yeah, I think that's low.
So you're going Serafian.
Yeah.
All right.
Might even throw that in a parlay, just a little odds builder.
And then the last fight on the FS1 prelims, you have Jonovan Webb. This is at the welterweight division. Jonovan Webb, versus Nathan Coy. Webb coming off a loss to Kyle Noak back in May of 2015. And Nathan Coy, this is a tough one, Gumby. 3-fight losing streak. He's coming off a submission loss to Danny Roberts back in December. This guy's fighting for his job.
Yeah, I would say both of them are fighting for their job. Webb a little bit less so, because he took that Noak fight on short notice. Coy, that lost to his nickname's Hot Chocolate, Danny Hot Chocolate Roberts.
Great nickname.
Great nickname. You know, Hot Chocolate, legitimate prospect. I believe he's 9-0, now 1-0 in the UFC.
I think I might make my nickname Cafe Vanilla.
Cafe Vanilla?
Yeah.
Yeah. White chocolate, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. Nathan Coy, I think he's probably going to win this fight through his wrestling. We got a chance to see him on that season, The Ultimate Fighter, the Black Zillions American Top Team season, which I'll go on record saying I didn't really enjoy.
I made it through 3 episodes.
I need the tournament format. This whole, like, I can pick whoever I want to fight any night and it can be the same guy 7 times.
Yeah.
And then, like, I think it probably the turning point for me was when Steve Montgomery, the creepy weasel there, had that seizure. And I was just like, man, this is just brutal.
I will say, I really thought they came back in a big way. We're getting soft tangent, but with McGregor versus Faber.
Oh, it was
that
great.
Was a great season.
It was an excellent season. Great fighters.
Great fighters. Yeah. Ryan Hall was there.
Yeah, we all love Ryan Hall. But no, back to our point here. Coy, you know, he's a pretty good wrestler. He's decent all around. Jonathan Webb, you know, you could go back and forth on what his best attribute is, but nothing like glaringly great about him. So I would say, you know, again, not that I keep saying this about fights on this card, but you kind of almost expect him to just get out wrestled here.
Understood. So that's who you're going with.
I'm
going
to go with Coy.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, that takes care of the FS1 prelims. And then you have the Fight Pass prelims. Now, our girl, Lauren Murphy, it does not have a bout as of this very moment because Sarah Morris had to pull out. But, you know, she did say, well, she has someone. They're just not announcing
it. She has a bout. She can't say it. We understand that. You know, the UFC wants to be the ones to break it. You know, still technically, she says she's got the bout agreement in front of her. She's got to sign it. So we look forward to seeing her fight. She's an exciting fighter, former Invicta champ. So, you know, I guess we're not going to get a chance to break that one down, but definitely right. Tune in and watch
but
her.
There still be a women's fight on that Fight Pass prelims. You'll have Marion Renault, who's coming off a loss to Holly Holm, unanimous decision loss. How crazy is that, that Marion Renault lasted longer with Holly Holm than Ronda Rousey did? Ha, ha, ha. Versus Ashley Evans-Smith, who's coming off a loss to Raquel Pennington, which was a submission in the first round back at UFC 181.
That was the bulldog choke, correct?
I think it was.
The bulldog choke, she went out cold. She was actually winning that fight with Rocky Pennington. Rocky Pennington, pretty legitimate bantamweight in that division, despite her record. I think she's like 6-5. But she's a very legitimate bantamweight. And Ashley Evans-Smith actually out-wrestled her for most of that fight and was on top. For a large portion of it, there was just like an awkward scramble. She wound up bulldog choked, and I'm pretty sure she went out cold, if I remember correctly. Renault, very good on her feet, which is actually what I think was taking Holly Holm so long. Not that like she couldn't handle her on the feet, because Holly Holm, obviously, different level. But her footwork's good enough so that Holm was at least playing it smart the whole time, not taking any risks. Because she didn't have to. She could just win the 3-round decision by just being smart kickboxing, and I think that's what she did. I don't know that Renault's takedown defense is good enough to beat Evans-Smith. Evans-Smith is like a 3-time collegiate All-American wrestler in the women's divisions, or maybe even Olympic trials or something like that. She's got like a large wrestling background. And as long as she can get her hands on Renault, she's going to be doing top game work and ground and pound the whole time. And, you know, foul suit of my whole talk pretty much on this card is this winds up being probably a discussion about whether or not she can wrestle her.
And in Vegas, Ashley Evans-Smith is the +155 dog to Marion Renault, the -175 favorite.
Yeah.
If you're keeping
track. That makes sense, because I think they think Renault is just going to box her up, and she could. That could be the way this goes, but I think if the wrestling comes into play, it's all Evans-Smith. Right. Evans-Smith also should get a shout-out for being the one who got the MMA world to stop talking about Fallon Fox. So thank you for that, Ashley Evans-Smith.
Yeah, that was an annoying sidebar to MMA forum conversations
all
everywhere.
The time. Yeah, all the time. And you always had that one jackass who just like threw in a Fallon Fox comment in every discussion.
All right, bringing us home is what I expect to be a sloppy heavyweight division potential slugfest. You have Shamil Abdurakhimov.
Abdurakhimov, yeah.
Who's coming off a loss to Timothy Johnson, fighting Anthony Free Train Hamilton. Hamilton is a one-time professional wrestler. I think he might still actually do some professional wrestling, but he's coming off a decision win over Daniel
Omielianczyk. Omielianczyk, yeah. Gotta love the Polishness. I got some Polish in me, too. Omielianczyk.
And before that, he had gotten his face smashed in by Todd Duffy. How do you see this one playing out?
So this one's really intriguing to me. Hamilton got a couple of his recent wins through takedowns and top control, especially the Omielianczyk win. He started to use his wrestling more, but Abdurakhimov is not the type of guy you can wrestle. He's a guy who forced Jeff Munson to keep his feet against him and outbox Jeff Munson, which, you know, you don't give a lot of credit to outboxing Jeff Munson, but to keep your feet against him is pretty impressive. He also did the same thing to Kenny Gardner, who's a hell of a wrestler in M1. So I think we're going to take the Russian on this one with the cautious point that if you're betting in MMA, I tend to stay away from heavyweights as best as I can. Either of these guys could knock the other one out, and I think it's going to go first round knockout somewhere.
Someone. Yeah. Somewhere. So in this one, you're kind of calling it a
Shamil Abdurakhimov. I'm going to say first round KO with the weird little left hook he throws. He throws like a nice little left hook. I'm going to say the left hook lands.
Nice. All right. And that wraps it up for Fight Night 83. Lauren Murphy will get a fight eventually, but as of taping right now, we don't know who she's fighting.
No, and I assume they'll announce that in the next day or two so that that person can start to build publicity as well.
Now, Gumby, the last thing we'll say before we wrap up here that was announced and something that you and I both geeked out about, that Fight Pass will be adding not only Glory Kickboxing, which is cool, but they will also be adding the Eddie Bravo Invitational.
Yes. And I have under fairly good authority, I'm pretty sure I read an article on it, they're adding all the libraries of the EBIs as well. If you are a person who enjoys high-level grappling, if you're, you know, somebody who grapples yourself, definitely check out these tournaments. These tournaments are the best of the best.
Eddie finally figured it out. Joe Rogan said this on one of his podcasts, but Eddie finally figured out the format that's needed to make submission grappling watchable for a casual viewer, for hardcore fans. It's in the overtime rules. It's in the fact that there are no points, so you can't just stall out if you're head on points, hold someone in a position. It's submission only. The guys are incentivized to get submissions via money.
Yeah, $12,500 per sub.
Man.
For a possibility of, I believe that's 50 G's if you get four subs. Right.
And then, so in overtime, let's say you are tied after, I believe it's 10 minutes, if you are tied, then almost like college football rules, each person takes the turn taking the back or from spider web and attacking. And he figured it out. And what I actually hope, and, you know, we'll talk about this. We hope to have some of the competitors on before EBI 6. We'll talk about this more in depth. But for me, from my perspective, from our perspective, because we're both huge submission grappling nerds, what I'm hoping is this paves the way for submission grappling to become a little more mainstream. I also hope that some of these tournaments, like let's say in Naga, lose the points format, because the points format always annoyed me.
I think
it's about the submissions.
It's definitely going to do things like that. You're going to see more tournaments pop up with sub only.
You and I both went to
Icon Grappling.
Which
huge plug for Icon Grappling here. TJ Thompson, who ran Pro Elite, I believe, the Pro Elite MMA organization, started up this grappling company. It's called Icon Grappling.
Should have them sponsor our show.
We should have them sponsor our show. Maybe I'll email them after this because we just gave them a free plug.
But
they're actually doing a show in, here's a free plug, up in Maine.
At the end of February.
Yeah, I think it's February 28th in Portland.
Awesome tournament.
If you're up
one
there,
of the best tournaments I've ever
one of
been
the
to.
Best run tournaments I've ever been to. Sub only.
I got four matches. You got five.
I got five.
Our buddy Charles got five.
I think he got six.
Yeah, he got six.
I competed with some really impressive black belts, brown belts, a couple of purple
there
belts.
There were a couple of former former UFC fighter was there? The Irish hand grenade.
Marcus Davis was there competing was awesome. Right next to us. You know, really fun stuff.
But, and then there's also the good fight is sub only. But the point being, I think EBI is going to put sub only on the map. I think you're starting to hear more and more about guys, people I really respect, like Eddie Cummins, Gary Tonin, guys who just attack, specifically legs.
Yeah, Vinny Megalish, too, from Syndicate MMA. John Wood trained there. Heavy grappling, he talked about how, BJJ has kind of become pussified. And this is changing that. This is bringing it back to where it should be.
And, you know, and this is, again, I keep quoting Rogan, but, you know, why can't something like this be on ESPN2 at 1 a.m. in the middle of the night? They put some crazy sports on sometimes.
I am watching football pregame half the time, and there's bowling on.
Right.
I'd way rather watch grappling than bowling.
So I just believe that, you know, I mean, listen, the whole landscape has shifted. Now it's more of a streaming service than people catching stuff and being introduced to stuff on cable. They find things on the internet. But that being said, I think this is the first step for submission grappling to be more mainstream accepted. Maybe we will see it on an ESPN 5 years from now. And is that actually a big deal anymore in 5 years? I don't know. I mean, everything's streaming now, but
yeah.
You get what I'm saying.
Yeah, so really exciting stuff. Can't wait to check that library out.
And we will come back with some previews of that as the event draws near. But if you
April?
Have... I think it's April, yeah.
Mid-April, yeah.
If you have Fight Pass, check out the EBIs, and we'll be back next week. You can always reach us, topturtlemma@gmail.com, or Twitter, @topturtlemma, And Gumby, you got anything else you want to tell our adoring public?
No, just watch those grappling matches, enjoy the fights this weekend, and we'll see you next week.
All right. When you get to the Top Turtle position in MMA, you should always be looking to finish. We are Top Turtle. We are finished.